Hello, and welcome to this week's Ukraine Calling program. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio. We'll have a roundup of the weekly news for you and a feature interview with Vincent Rees on Ukrainian tourism. But first, as always, the news. Anger over street graffiti. The removal of graffiti caused an uproar in downtown Kyiv this week. Angry activists protested and broke a window in an upmarket furniture store. The owner of the store, Emporium, had taken it upon himself to remove some street art from the facade of his shop. The street art had been created during the Maidan protests 3.5 years ago. It depicted the iconic Ukrainian writers Taras Shevchenko, Lesya Ukrainka, and Ivan Franko. The removal raised the ire of some Maidan protesters and indignation among many Maidan supporters. A Kyiv prosecutor then brought criminal charges against the persons who had removed the graffiti and street art on the grounds that the art had historical significance and was thus protected by law. New education law passed. Ukrainian parliament passed a law on education this week on September the 5th. It will bring about significant changes to the education system in Ukraine. The goal is to move education away from the old Soviet-era authoritarian model and methodologies and move towards a contemporary Western method. For school children, this would mean new curricula, new teaching methods, and inclusive education. For teachers, a system of recertification would be introduced and linked to salary raises. In general, there would be greater emphasis on the Ukrainian language as the language of learning and fewer hours given to education in minority languages. The law will be introduced gradually, in phases, with some innovations starting in 2018, and the rest will be introduced over the next 13 years. Another Ukrainian abducted. There are now 144 Ukrainians illegally detained in Russia as prisoners, according to Ukraine's Security Service statistics for September. The number grew this past week as more civilians who were neither in the conflict zone nor armed were abducted by Russia, according to Yuri Tandit, advisor to the head of the Security Service. A case that received a lot of media attention is that of 19-year-old Ukrainian man Pavlo Hryb. He disappeared on a trip to neighboring Belarus. Hryb had been writing pro-Ukrainian messages in social media and had allegedly become acquainted with a Russian girl via the internet. He went to visit her for a date in Gomel in Belarus, where he was detained by Russian special services. Upon intervention from lawyers and Ukrainian consular officials, 2 weeks later, the Russian security service FSB admitted that Hryb was being charged with terrorism offense and was being held in Krasnodar, Russia. This week, another 22-year-old man was abducted at the Stanitsa Luhanska checkpoint crossing. Mykola Petrukhov, who had worked as a bag carrier, was detained by pro-Russian militants. All contact with him has been lost and his whereabouts are unknown. The war. Due to the so-called start of school ceasefire, the level of tensions between pro-Russian forces and the Ukrainian army has significantly decreased in the Donbas since the beginning of September. Artillery shelling and armed attacks became less systematic and less organized. Over the past week, only one Ukrainian serviceman was killed and one wounded. Meanwhile, the international community is debating the prospect of a peacekeeping mission, which would be organized in the Ukrainian conflict zone under the United Nations. Russia, Ukraine, and the United States have already presented their views on the issue. On September the 5th, Russia submitted a draft resolution to the UN Security Council proposing to deploy an armed mission along the demarcation line in the conflict zone. In response, Ukraine argued that the future mission should be deployed on the territory of the whole conflict zone, particularly along the Ukrainian-Russian border. According to the German foreign minister, Germany and France would develop a plan for the future mission where both conflicting options would be taken into account. Zapad 2017 exercises. Ukraine has strengthened its control along its borders, according to President Petro Poroshenko. This is in anticipation of the Zapad 2017 joint strategic exercises involving Russian and Belarusian troops. According to official data provided by the participants, the strategic exercise will involve 13,000 troops. However, Ukraine's Security and Defense Council advisor Oleksandr Turchinov has suggested that the number could be much higher, as high as 240,000. Meanwhile, Ukraine's Minister of Defense, Stepan Poltorak, has stated that he believes that the exercises Zapad 2017 could be used as a cover-up for Russia to launch new aggression against Ukraine. President Poroshenko stated that Ukraine will be carefully monitoring whether all the equipment brought into Belarus for the exercises Zapad 2017 will then be brought out of Belarus. In-house news. Hromadske Radio had a success and a setback this week. First, the bad news. We applied for a local 24-hour broadcast license in Lutsk, the city in western Ukraine. But the State Broadcasting Council granted the license to a commercial music station instead. On the good news front, on Monday, September the 4th, Hromadske Radio resumed 2 hours of broadcasting on the national airwaves on Ukrainian radio. The evening show, Hromadske Khvila, is now heard live all over Ukraine from 9 to 11 p.m. like it was from 2014 through 2016.
Well, welcome to this week's in-depth discussion. We'll be talking about the state of tourism in Ukraine. And my guest is Vincent Rees, a Canadian who organizes tours to Ukraine. He'll tell us a little bit more about who the people are that want to come to Ukraine. And I'll ask him about the state of tourism, the facilities, are things developing? Is it just Lviv that's come a long way and Kyiv? How is the rest of the country and the other areas they visit? So, Vincent, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Vincent, I see on your business card that you're the founder of Cobblestone Freeway Tours. Sounds rather British rather than linked to Ukrainian. And that you described yourself as a cultural explorer. Perhaps enlighten us. What do you mean by this?
Well, first of all, the cobblestone part, I think it was the cobblestones of Lviv that inspired me kind of to start the company. And I think a lot of people, when they think of old roads, old pathways, medieval Europe, that it kind of inspires them to imagine traveling and imagine journeys to an older place, you know, the old world, the new world. And myself, I got involved in Ukrainian dance as a child. My family's half Ukrainian, and I got very involved in Ukrainian community, Ukrainian dance, and I got to come to Ukraine in 1991 and started studying folk dance after the Soviet Union collapsed. And for many years was traveling here and started bringing groups of students to study Ukrainian folk dance. And through that, I ended up creating this company that was bringing not just dancers and choirs and Ukrainian community groups, but general tourists as well started to want to come to see the beautiful country that is Ukraine today.
And you yourself, your name, Rees, suggests a Welsh name.
Yeah, my dad's family is Welsh.
Okay, a great singing nation.
Yes, two great singing nations, Ukrainian. My mom's family is Ukrainian from western Ukraine, from Halychyna, and they immigrated to Canada in 1911, and so grew up in Canada, which is, of course, very multicultural. And the more and more I think about my own background, my own experience, and what is Canada and what is Ukraine today, I see so many similarities in the multiculturalism that is evolving in Ukraine.
Okay, well, tell us a little bit about your first attempts to bring not simply people involved in cultural life, dancers, singers that you said, but people that were anxious to retrace their roots, to visit places where their parents or ancestors had grown up.
Well, it all started with, like I said, the folk groups, and then their aunts and uncles and friends and families started to ask if they could come too. And so we started offering in 2011 tours for people that wanted to exactly that, see the country for what it is and do some generic tours. And there wasn't a lot of people offering tours at that point, and things started to pick up very fast. And they were visiting the sites of Ukraine, the major centers, Kyiv, Lviv. A lot of people really wanted to see Chernivtsi and Ternopil in the Carpathian Mountains because, as you know, the first and second waves of immigration to the Western, like North America, came from that part, Bukovina and Halychyna. And so that's the thrust of the beginnings of our company. But since then, people have latched on and want to see all kinds of the country. We've been doing tours to Odessa and Kharkiv and all over the place, plus combining tourism of Ukraine with other countries. So, but still, and since the conflict in Ukraine started, We've sort of moved toward back towards tours in Western Ukraine. And then this summer, they started to pick up again and spread out again to other parts of Ukraine.
Well, tell us, has the Revolution of Dignity, Maidan, and everything that came after, did that increase interest in Ukraine, or did it turn people off?
Well, of course, initially it scared people off. We had, in 2015, basically all our tours were canceled. 2014, sorry. 2015, they started to gently pick up again. But of course, the revolution had tragic consequences. But the unexpected side effect was the increased awareness of Ukraine in general throughout the greater population. We brought a group of bloggers here just this last May from across the United States, England, and Europe, and non-Ukrainians. And they've written well over 20 articles about Ukraine since that trip. And they're getting hundreds and hundreds of thousands of likes and clicks and views. And the awareness of Ukraine beyond Kyiv and Lviv is growing enormously.
I had the good fortune of bumping into you last night in a very nice Ukrainian restaurant, Taras Bulba, here in Kyiv. And I saw the group that you had just brought over, and I was impressed by the fact that they were only just meeting here and that they had different ethnic backgrounds. It wasn't mm-hmm. simply Ukrainians. There were Jewish people, there were ethnic Germans, mm-hmm. others. So these tours are attracting not only Ukrainians, I understand.
Like I said, it started with Ukrainians looking for their roots and their heritage and finding their ancestral homeland. I think that will continue and grow. But more and more, through their neighbors and friends and their community, people are hearing about Ukraine. It's safe and it's not, so far it's not very expensive relative to other places in the world to visit. And it's very comfortable and the facilities are getting better and improving. And, you know, I would say the Wi-Fi in Ukraine is better than in Canada in some places, as you know. And lots of people, because I'm Canadian and my company is based in Canada, most of my tourists are coming from Canada. But we've been bringing in now people from England, Australia, Argentina, Brazil. So we're getting people calling us from all over the place. So it's really, I think we've just scratched the surface of the potential for tourism in Ukraine at all.
And are the local authorities that you deal with, or shall we say your local partners, are they up to speed? Are they responsive? Are they timely in their responses? Do they deliver what you want?
I would say overall, yes. And I would say overall, the people that are involved in the different tourism boards and I'll say the main centers that we visit are Kyiv, Odessa, Chernivtsi, and Lviv. Those are our four major centers. They are excited and growing and trying to learn. And we've met them at different tourism shows around the world, in New York and in Shanghai recently, especially with Lviv Tourism Board and Kyiv Tourism Board and Odessa. They're very keen, and I think the improved roads, the improved infrastructure overall is just a win-win for Ukraine and for tourism, for tourists that are coming to Ukraine. So
you are seeing change happening?
Absolutely, absolutely. I would say every year I see a big increase in the fluidity of the ability for tourists to communicate with young generations of people that speak a little bit more English. The signs in some of the major cities are in both English and Ukrainian. Hotel staff speak multiple languages and are very, very much more professional. The old Soviet stereotype of customer service is being washed away, you know, people are blown away by the quality and the service in Ukraine.
And the beauty of the country.
Oh, and the beauty of the country and the architecture and the friendliness and the warmth of the people. I mean, people just, the propaganda that they've been fed, they're realizing is not true. People that are Ukrainian know because they've got family or they've heard from friends and whatnot. But people that aren't Ukrainian just can't even believe there's a country this big in the middle of Europe that they didn't know about.
Right.
You know,
I've just come back from a few days relaxing on a beach near Odessa in Zatoka. I was mm-hmm. very impressed by the quality of the service, the quality of the beaches down mm-hmm. there. And again, Ukraine has a lot of potential. I think that since the occupation of Crimea by Russia, the other alternatives are being found and mm-hmm. Which will attract more people.
Well, I know in the West, Lviv and whatnot, tourism has improved of Ukrainians visiting their own country. You know, I think lots of Ukrainians used to visit visit Crimea and the Black Sea, and are perhaps choosing to, you know, see Europe, a little bit of Europe within Ukraine, which is the West.
Right.
And not to mention mass busloads of Polish people and Germans and Czechs and Slovaks and Belarusians are coming in as well. So all kinds.
Yeah. And on the downside, what needs to be improved still?
Well, there's still work to be done on the roads, I think, but definitely you do see an improvement every year. You know, you see one more road is fixed. Anecdotal story is we used to go from Lviv to Kosiv. We really like spending time in the Carpathian Mountains. Our tourists really love the Carpathian Mountains. It used to take us about 6 hours. And because the roads were just so horrible. But this last summer, we could do it in about 3.
Excellent. Well, tell me, a typical group that comes over on your tours, how large is it? What's the sort of gender balance, age balance in it?
Well, the groups that like to come as part of their heritage tours and perform and whatnot, they can be anywhere from 20 to 60 people, 2 or 3 busloads. And often they'll want to visit the sites where their ancestors came from, plus see Kyiv and Odessa, perhaps. Generic tourism groups come at Christmas. We had a group that wanted to go skiing this year and went to Bukovel and spent Christmas in a village, and that was a neat experience for them. There's so much rich living traditions in Ukraine that people can experience that have been washed away by, you know, modernity in other parts of the world. We get a group that comes at Easter time every year. They want to experience the Easter traditions because that's also a unique thing. But the bulk of our tourists come anywhere between May and September. And a group of, can be a group of 10, it can be a group of 30, somewhere in that range. I would say more women than men tend to travel. And we get a lot of single female travelers in our group, which goes against the stereotype of Ukraine. But, a lot of...
Because they say there's a shortage of men here. Constantly we hear from the women here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But, we get a lot of, especially from the Ukrainian diaspora, they're interested in finding, their family's heritage. And it's the females in the family that often are the ones that are curious about the history of the family.
So you must sense the excitement that they feel when they actually get to a place that they've heard so much about from their grandmothers and grandfathers.
Well, we have people that will start crying on the first day, and people that'll make little bags of dirt from the village and take them home with them. I know that's probably not very legal, but that sort of that nostalgia for a land that they couldn't visit for 100 years or 125 years, whenever it was their family left. And this year we just had a group from Argentina, this year they celebrate 120 years of immigration. And the group was about 70 people. And we organized a performance for them where the choir that sang for them told me afterwards, sometimes people do cry at the end of the concerts with emotion. But they said they've never seen people cry at the beginning of a concert. And a photographer, a journalist, caught a picture of people crying during the opening song. And it was just, they were so happy to hear that Narodny voice and that traditional spirit of Ukrainian culture that they'd only heard about on YouTube and through
Right.
Ancestors.
Well, to put it in a broader context now, as we come to the end of the talk or our discussion, you mentioned that, there's a lot of tourists now coming from Poland and maybe even from Germany. I see Germans and Austrians also in Lviv in particular. Mm-hmm. So do you feel that Ukraine is now on the tourist map of Europe, finally? Lviv has been for many years, thanks largely to the modernization or gentrification and the football, the Euro tournament that was held there. Mm-hmm. Here we had the Eurovision that has helped in other football events, sports events. Do you think that Ukraine is now fairly well-placed on the tourist map or set of priorities?
I think so. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said Lviv has already been on for a number of years. And they said many years ago that Lviv will become the next Krakow or the next Prague in terms of tourism and Budapest. So I think that's solid. Lviv is jam-packed. But you're starting to see, you know, tourists in Poltava, in Kharkiv, in Uzhhorod, in Chernivtsi, in Lutsk, and Ternopil, and other places where you didn't hear foreigners walking around, or more cafes and infrastructure are popping up throughout the country. Young entrepreneurs in Ukraine are embracing this wave of interest in their new country. So I think so.
You mentioned Poltava just now. Is there potential also to develop tourism in the east of Ukraine?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Poltava, I think, still be central Ukraine. But just before the conflict began, we were already going to Zaporizhia, Poltava, Kirovohrad, which is now Kropivnitsky, and we were going to Crimea and Odessa and Kharkiv. And that kind of was on a pause. And now there's renewed interest for sure. And I think places like Poltava, Zaporizhia, and Kharkiv will lead the charge in that interest in tourism, you know. And the river cruises are up and running again from Kyiv down to Odessa through Chervona Ruta. And so all that kind of interest is renewed. And especially the caveat is that I think people are still worried and maybe a little bit anxious that the conflict could flare up again. And, you know, we hope that that doesn't happen. But if it doesn't and things find a way to stabilize, and I think there's no stopping tourism in Ukraine. I mean, tourism from the West, which, you know, didn't go much past the old Iron Curtain, has now expanded far into Ukraine and Georgia and Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, and other countries. So the interest from the West to travel to these near Eastern countries is growing exponentially.
So finally, thank you very much. Vincent, what would you tell listeners who have never been to Ukraine, somewhere in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, listening to us?
I would say come sooner than later. I really think that what inspired me to come in those years, I've never traveled to France, for example. I always thought, well, I can go to France anytime. But because I wanted to catch a glimpse of this changing of civilization, this shift in the culture while it's alive and happening now, you know. But I still will get to France one day.
Thank you very much. Okay, so I'm very grateful to Vincent Rees, who has a company called Cobblestone Freeway Tours, and he's the founder of it and a cultural explorer, for sharing his impressions, his experience with us, and for being still so keen and excited about coming to Ukraine and bringing others here. Thank you.
And thank you for having me in our unexpected meeting in Taras Bulba last night. It was good times.
Thank you.
Culture. There's a lively literary scene in Ukraine. Next week, the annual book fair opens in Lviv. One novel that recently caught my attention is a historical fiction piece by Oleksandr Irvanets called Kharkiv, 1938. He paints a world where the Ukrainian People's Republic of 1918 had succeeded and was not defeated by the Bolsheviks, where Stalin does not win the power struggle and Kirov is the leader of the Russian Socialist Republic, and Hitler does not win the election in Germany. An excerpt of the novel was published in the literary journal Kritika, and we'll post a link to it on our website. Over the coming weeks, we'll be telling you more about new works being published in Ukraine. Music. This week's song is a contemporary and mystical rendition of a Ukrainian folk song called Rozidisya Tumanochku, which means, roughly speaking, disperse you fog. Maria Nikulina is a young singer from Kyiv who is part of the Frescos band. She had the inspiration for this composition and recorded it in just a few hours. Enjoy. Розійдися туманочку, розійдися туманочку, Ukraine Calling will be back next week with a show for you. To join our mailing list, please write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org or just write to us and let us know what you think. I'm Marta Dechork for Hromadske Radio. Thanks so much for listening.